This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Excited to be on with you this morning for the next 2 hours. Rick DiPietro is going to join us in about 30 minutes to talk about the Islanders and the Capitals. Islanders do win that first game of the series 4-2, and it got pretty heated, that's for sure. You know, some penalties, some sloppy play. And as we know, the Caps went up 2-0, but the Islanders came back, scored four straight, roughed some people up. And here we are. Game two is Friday at 8 o'clock. So excited to have Rick DiPietro on. Also, other teams, obviously, other series that are taking place. Who does Rick see winning this whole damn thing in those two bubbles in Canada? Also, Rich Cimini is going to be joining us at 10 o'clock today to talk about the Jets. A lot of storylines surrounding there. Lev Bell, what type of season can we realistically anticipate from him this season? Everything we're hearing is that he looks good, he feels good. He came out yesterday. We'll play some clips, what he had to say in regard to his relationship with Adam Gase. He's like, I don't understand why everybody's making such a big deal about, you know, my relationship with Adam Gase as if it's a negative thing. I love Adam Gase. He's a great leader of men. Okay. All right. We believe you. Very interesting in regard to like how the media is covering teams, you know, so I guess Friday will be the first practice that media can attend. And also, I want to say coming up this weekend, Monday will be the first padded practice. Can we marinate in that for a minute? That Monday will be the first padded practice. And I'm also curious to find out from Rich Cimini how many padded practices the Jets anticipate to have. I want to say, Ray, was it like confirmed that it's going to be like no more than seven padded practices for these teams before regular season game one?
I'd be lying if I told you for sure, but I think it's in that ballpark.
Oh, it's ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. People, what can we on it? Like, I can't. Like, what can we realistically expect from NFL teams with seven padded practices? And probably, let's be honest, those padded practices, they're padded, but they're playing with flags is probably what's happening. Let's be honest. Do you know how many injuries, soft tissue injuries I anticipate the NFL to experience and players to experience this year, because their bodies are just not going to be ready? A ton. I know we sit here and we talk about COVID-19 and, you know, what players potentially can contract it and how's that going to work? And then are they going to be put on the shelf for 14 days? But I don't think enough is being discussed. Like, in order to play football and be in football shape, your body needs to experience physicality. Your body needs to understand what that entails and how it deals with physicality. That's what football shape means. These dudes aren't even going to be in football shape probably for the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season. So I just don't get it. And this is hard for me because, you know anything about me, I live, eat, sleep, breathe, you name it, football. Like, it's my life. It's my love. It's my passion. It's my joy. I'm so torn in regard to the season. So I'm actually looking forward to having Rich Cimini on. We'll get an update with him in regard to the Jets. Also, a little bit later on the show, I want to play for you the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott spoke to the media yesterday, and a few things. Well, Jerry Jones is not sharing his 2020. What he would like to see his team, or what he's telling his player to do when it comes to the national anthem. He said that he's spoken to President Trump and a number of players, current players, former players, in regard to what to do. So we'll see what happens there. That should be interesting. But more importantly, Dak Prescott came out and said something very, very negative in regard to the offense that he has run, has been a part of for the past few years, and really took a shot at Jason Garrett, who, of course, as we know now, is the offensive coordinator for the Giants. So I do want to dive into that as well. And yesterday, as we ended the show, and Alan Hahn began the show, the Big 12 press conference was taking place. And So their decision, the Big 12, as we know right now, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 have all decided to postpone their seasons to the spring. Okay, this is what we know. As of right now, the Big 12 came out and they said they are moving forward as if they are going to play. Now, keep in mind, their season is expected to start on September 26th. The ACC, the SEC, the Sun Belt, they as well have said that they are going to move forward and they are going to play in the fall as well. So where it stands right now is you've got 53 teams that are anticipating to move their football season to the spring. And you have 77 teams in college football that are willing to play in the fall. Okay, that's where it stands right now. Now, it doesn't mean that as we get closer to September, that the Big 12 or the ACC or the SEC, which I highly doubt the SEC will not try to. I think they're hell bent on trying to play. But, you know, I was watching Get Up this morning and Heather Dinich was on and Feinbaum was on. And I thought it was interesting. They were talking to Greeny and we touched on this yesterday. It's like, why is it that all these different conferences are coming up with different game plans based on what the quote unquote scientists are telling them? And as I said yesterday, it's kind of like sport imitates life, right? Like I'm in following the story and in listening to, you know, what's being reported and what the commissioners are saying. It's kind of like the NCAA and these five power conferences. It's like it's become a reflection of America, hasn't it? In a sense. You know, Florida governor, oh, we're keeping our beaches open. Nobody has to wear masks. Up here in New York and New Jersey, you have to wear masks. Heck, I live in Hoboken. If I'm walking around Hoboken without a mask, I can get fined $250. $250. If a police officer here in Hoboken decides to, write me up, that happens here. Not the case in Florida. And so we're seeing a reflection of America with these power conferences. You know, the Pac-12 out west, very liberal. Doctors are worried about not only just the testing and being able to get the testing and the results back as quickly so they could, if there's a contraction, somebody contracts it, finding where that where they got contracted and being able to hone in on it, let alone the COVID rate still increasing out there in the West. In California, Arizona, so we're putting it on hold. Big Ten, apparently they're worried about what could happen. They're listening to their scientists and they're worrying about what could happen. And meanwhile, the ACC and the SEC and those conferences that are deciding to, we're going to move along as planned. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that as we get closer to that September start date, whether it's September 5th, September 26th, whatever the case may be, they could change their mind. I mean, listen, anybody could change your mind at any given time. And maybe they're going to sit and wait and see how this plays out. But, you know, I said this yesterday. I think this is why we as a country is not doing better than other countries around the world when it comes to COVID-19 is because we have these little pockets. Everybody's state is behaving differently, is putting different protocols, different rules in place. And so we as a unit, as a whole, as a country, are failing. And now we're seeing the same thing happen here in college football. It really is. So as Feinbaum said, we'll play a clip for you a little bit later. You know, he said this has become very political, and he's absolutely right. Here's my question when it comes to the decisions that are being made in college football. And one is, you know, there's no win-win situation here, right? Like, both decisions are bad decisions for the young men that are involved here. Let's be honest. You know, one group is saying, okay, we're going to play in the fall. So what are they saying? We're willing to risk our young student athletes of contracting COVID-19 and potentially having long-term heart issues because we want to play in the fall and they want to play in the fall. Those that are now anticipating to have their season in the spring are pretty much saying, you know what? We're going to push it in the spring, but now we are going to force those young athletes to play two seasons in one calendar year. No bueno. That is risking health in regard to soft tissue and a number of injuries that could happen. That is not a safe situation for those players either. Night and day. One, you're talking about a virus. The other, you're talking about, you know, ACL, MCL, whatever the case may be. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's no win-win situation here. Let's be honest. This is tough. These commissioners are definitely making their money right now in decisions that they have to make. Here's another one that I thought about, and that is, you know, do you devalue an NCAA championship this year? How can you not? And what are you going to have one championship in the fall and another in the spring? Are you going to have two champions? Are you going to crown two champions this season? Because like I said, where it stands right now, you've got 53 college teams who are willing to play in the spring. You've got 77 college teams that are willing to play in the fall. Those are substantial numbers. That's substantial competition. Now, obviously, you're not having the cream of the crop. You're not having, you know, all Power Five obviously are not playing at the same time. So do you diminish those championships? There's just so many questions here. I tell you, 800-919-3776 is the phone number. So like I said, Rick DiPietro at 9:30, Rich Cimini at 10. Also, you've got a lot going on in regard to Major League Baseball. The Mets, they take care of the Nationals last night. Pete Alonso finally looking like the Pete Alonso from last season. Doubled twice, home run, three RBIs. Heading into last night's game, he was batting 197. So now the Mets 8-11, 4-7 at home. They play later on this afternoon, by the way. It's a 1 o'clock game. David Peterson on the bump for the Mets. And they're hoping to get Cano back on Friday, just FYI. But I guess really the bigger storyline here is what's going on with the Yankees. Now, they did beat Atlanta last night 6-3. But and Ray and I were talking about, you know, the Michael Kay show yesterday, and he came out yesterday and was pretty disappointed with Judge. You know, why can't the Yankees be honest when it comes to Aaron Judge? You know, if you recall, you were watching that game in the 6, Judge gets pulled, social media goes crazy. Well, what's wrong? You know, even though Yankees were up 8-0, what's wrong with Judge? Why is he getting pulled? And of course, after the game, post-game, Booney plays it down. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because this is a franchise, this is an organization that has really dealt with a lot of injury to a lot of players. And this is a season, let's be honest, 60-game season. This is a season that you cannot afford. You could not afford to have the injuries that the Yankees dealt with last year. Too short a period of time. Not enough time to heal. Not enough time for a guy to get on the mend and get back. Just not. And so I would imagine that there is concern. And there is, if you're scared, say you're scared. To be transparent. Especially, A, playing in this pandemic season of a shortened season, on top of B, the history that the Yankees have had, especially as of late, in regard to injuries, and even the fact that Stanton, of course, is on the IL. Here's the positive. Clint Frazier, dude, came out last night. 3 hits, home run, 2 RBIs. My question is, why isn't this dude an everyday player? Is it because he doesn't necessarily fit the brand of the Yankees? Not as polished, a little edgy, hasn't always walked the line, didn't want to cut the hair, whatever the case may be. I don't understand. Every time this dude is called up, he delivers. And I know that the topic of conversation or the debate is him or Brent Gardner. And I understand what Gardner does in that clubhouse and what he means as a veteran and a leader, especially since CeCe's not there this season. And I understand that in a pandemic environment where you need to rely on your veterans to step up and keep everybody in lock and step. Look what's going on with the Cubs. 12-3. You know, and different sport, but same comment. Joe Judge came out last week and said, you know the teams that are going to be successful in the NFL? Teams that are going to stay healthy. And how are teams going to stay healthy, especially in the NFL, when they're letting their players go home to their families? It's lock and step. It's being committed to your franchise. It's being committed to your organization. It's being accountable to your teammates and doing the right thing. And I'll say it again, Buster only, quote unquote, live like monks throughout the season. Live like monks during this pandemic. This is what you need to do to stay healthy. Make sure that you don't contract COVID-19. Make sure you don't bring it into your clubhouse. And that's exactly what the Cubs are doing. They are feeling good. Right now, 95% chance of making it to the postseason. Why? They're going up against teams that did not lock in step with one another. Cleveland, the Cardinals, the Marlins, the Reds. This is what's important. So I understand, you know, and I want to imagine, you know, having veteran guys in there that are going to make sure that teammates are going to be held accountable. Like, I look, Gardner, there is a value in that, right? Gardner, I think, is that guy for the Yankees in that clubhouse. But there has to be a way to get Clint Frazier up here and active and attractive every day. I'm sure Yankee fans feel the same way I do.
I don't know the name of the epidemiologist that Bowlesby is using, but I hope he'll call the White House and whatever person that is called or his name, I hope he becomes the new CDC director, because the CDC hasn't been able to figure out this virus in 5 months, so I don't know how the Big 12 has figured it out. Greeny, this is about politics, local politics. Big 10 and the Pac-12 looked around at their constituency and they made a quick decision. The SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, Bowlesby included, are listening to not only their presidents, but to their governmental leaders. And right now, I think they're pushing them to get as close to September 26 as possible. That is still like climbing Mount Everest, but it's a good game to play. And there's also another game going on, and that's the Game of Thrones between the Power Five commissioners. And they have already eliminated Kevin Warren of the Big Ten and Larry Scott of the Pac-12. So the remaining three are still alive for the crown.
Of course, Greeny needed a little bit more clarification. Anytime anybody compares anything to Game of Thrones, I want more clarification. This is what Paul had to say.
I can't say the word on a family television show, but this is a macho game going on, Greeny. It's who can outlast the other one, who can look the best when it's all over. And it doesn't mean anything in the macro sense of whether we're going to have college football or not, but it's about trying to gain power in this rudderless ship called college football.
Again, Paul Feinbaum joining Greeny on GetUp, 800-919-3776. Sport imitating life, life imitating sport, microcosm of what we're going through right now in America. Let's go to Mike in Long Island. Mike, you're up.
Hi, Anita. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say, good morning. I think that this notion that the conferences are saying that they're looking out for the best interest of the players' safety by canceling the fall season, I think that's a little hypocritical if they are going to plan on playing in the spring like they're saying, because that would mean you're having late teens, early 20s people playing 25 football games in a calendar year unless you just had to permanently football a spring sport. And if you look at...
did we just lose Mike? Unfortunately. Mike, sorry if you can, try to call back. Ira, hold on one second. I'm going to get to you in just a second. I just want to share with folks, like, you know, what does that mean in regards? Here's, well, let me preface by saying this. I highly doubt the NCAA is going to have spring football. First of all, I think this has been postponed, and unfortunately, I think the season will be postponed for those teams that don't, those programs who don't play now. I pray to God that I'm wrong. I just don't. I think as we get closer to the spring, I think our situation is going to get worse. I think the only way our situation, I don't mean to be a negative Nelly, I'm just trying to be a realist here. I think our only way that our situation gets better is if we have a vaccine. Okay. So what does this mean? How does this affect the NFL? In reading a very excellent article that's up on ESPN right now, a few things. Number one, the NFL will consider having games not just on Saturday, but on Friday as well. There is a chance that we will have football on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Just marinate NFL football. Just marinate in that for a minute. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And it's keep in mind, there are teams, NFL teams are discussing not staying over in select cities. So traveling the same day they play. And so how crucial that will be if the NFL has games in the 4 o'clock, if not 8 o'clock hours. So that way you have it, you give a team, if they're going to travel the same day, they have the opportunity to travel to that city, arrive there in the morning, get situated, get acclimated to the time change, whatever the case may be, and be ready to play. So that there is a chance that the majority of, if there is no college football this fall, there is a chance that the NFL will be playing all those days, let alone having a lot more evening games, especially if teams are going to be traveling the same day they play. This will not affect, from what I'm reading, from what I'm understanding, this will not affect the NFL draft. Now, based on the new collective bargaining agreement, the draft date still has to happen between February 14th and June 2nd. And as we know, the draft typically happens the last week of April. Keep in mind, Major League Baseball, they're drafting while players, while baseball players are still playing. That happens. So anyway, anticipate that the NFL draft will not change. The date of the NFL draft right now is not scheduled to change. What will change? Very interesting that there could be a combine that might be moved up, like a mini combine in December, maybe. So NFL is discussing because guys are playing in the spring. You can't have the combine. So how do you get those guys there? So maybe they change the combine date and they move it up and they have like a mini combine. Maybe they have two combines. Maybe they have one combine for the players in the programs that are going to be playing in the spring. And they have another combine for those that are playing in the fall. And also, and we talked about this yesterday, chances are your top 100, 200 players more than likely will opt out and not play in the spring because it'll be too close to potentially getting drafted in the NFL and they don't want to risk any type of injury. Soft tissue injury, whatever the case may be. So that's how this decision in regard to college football will be affecting the NFL. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, welcome in.
Hey, good morning, Anita. How are you?
Good morning.
Boy, how nice would it be if you're talking about going to St. Elmo's for dinner at the Combine, if this all passes? That would be very nice to everybody. But, it's amazing. Tonight should have been the Jet-Giant preseason game. It's so weird to see a game, it's off the board. But I want to get to Bell, but check with Rich when he comes on. I think it's a dozen to 14 padded practices, but you have to double check with him. But I tell you, the comments that I read that Bell made yesterday, I'm really glad to see, because it looks like he's taking on a bit of a leadership role and trying to set the right example over there, which I'm surprised, but I give him credit for doing that. Between him and Gase's relationship, whatever it is. Hopefully, listen, money talks, and he's playing for a contract, because after this year, all right, I think if they cut him, they save like $9 to $10 million on a cap. There's like $4 million towards, dead money. So he's playing either to stay on with the Jets or for another team next year. And I'm going to go under the assumption, I'm going to pretend it's not realistic that they're going to play a full season. I think he could possibly have a big year if this offensive gels at some point during the year. I just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I hope so. Ira, thanks for the phone call. I think there's a lot going on here for Bell. I think big disappointment from last season, whether it was his part, whether it was the offense part, whether it was Adam Gase not utilizing him properly. And that was a big storyline, not just here in New York, but across the board. Le'Veon Bell, a lot of people, you know me, fantasy football, a lot of people went out and drafted Le'Veon Bell in the first round or, you know, towards the top of the second round. And he did not deliver, far from it. So, and also I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. It's evident he's upset that Jamal Adams was traded and Jamal Adams was lobbying to get traded. And I think he's pretty upset about it. And so I think he's playing with a little anger, a little resentment for a number of reasons. Anita marks in for the fellas this morning, DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. And without further ado, one of them joins us now, and that's Rick DiPietro. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Anita. Thank you for holding down the fort for us.
I try. It's actually so it's been interesting because I've been filling in for Chris Carlin all month. And so I had this great schedule where I'd play golf in the morning, get home around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and start prepping. And then it was on from 7 to 10. This has switched some things up a little bit. So now I'm on with you for you guys from 10 to noon. And so now it's later tea time. That's all that's changed, buddy.
Yeah. Refresh my memory. What's golf again? Since I haven't been able to pick up a club in a year.
Are you kidding? It's the only thing that's keep me set. So I'm golfing. I've taken up tennis. I'm playing tennis.
And now who's better than you?
And I'm hiking. Those three things and my dogs. So those four things have kept me sane through this insane time we're living in right now. Anyway, I hope you and your family are safe and healthy. And it's great to hear your voice.
We're all good. We're absolutely all good. Just trying to keep these maniac kids of mine busy.
God, I could sit here and have a conversation with you about homeschooling, but we won't. Let's talk about the Islanders. They take care of the Capitals 4-2. Didn't look like a sloppy play, some penalties, but they still got the job done. How'd they do it?
Well, that's not how you draw it up. I can promise you that. I mean, that's not what Barry Trotz wanted to see in the first period. I know the Capitals' power play during the regular season was kind of middle of the pack, but when you look at the amount of talent they have on that team, the last thing you want to do is put yourself in penalty trouble early in that game, and that's exactly what they did in the first period. They got away with it, made them pay in the second period. Oshie had the two goals, but then, I mean, the turning point of that game is, Eberle's goal late in that second period. Guys going to the locker room, a little bit of momentum, and then they come out in the third period. Anders Lee, first minute of the third period, ties it up, and then great play by Brock Nelson, kind of a sneaky good play. Killing the penalty, he flips it in, makes the goalie handle it. Hopey decides he wants to put it down and play it. They create the turnover, and then they get the shorthanded goal. So not how you'd want to play a team like the Washington Capitals, but 5-on-5, they were good, so they got away with it.
All right, so let's talk about Lee, right? Like, setting the tone physically, the physicality in this, right? Two fights yesterday. Definitely now this is a series that, if you weren't tuning in, now you want to tune in because of the history between these two teams and then now the expectation of how physical the series is going to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you knew going into the series, anyone that, has watched these two teams play, you also have the storyline of Barry Trotz being, the former head coach of the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup with that team. So, both teams are familiar with each other. You can probably ask Rangers fans. They probably feel the same way Islanders fans do about Tom Wilson. He's a talented guy, but he's an agitator. He's physical. So to see, Anders Lee, who's not known as a guy who likes to drop the gloves too often, but he will, to step up the way he did was, I mean, anytime your captain decides he wants to step up and create that kind of, set that kind of tone, I mean, the bench feeds off that. And then on top of that, the hit on Backstrom. Backstrom's one of their most talented players. So to have him out for the game was, you hate to see it, obviously, but, I mean, it's clearly to the Islanders' benefit.
So what do you expect based on what you saw yesterday? And again, puck drops for them again, game two, Friday night at 8 o'clock. What do you expect in this series? I said this yesterday, going into the series, you could take the Islanders. They were +122 to win the series.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at this, these two teams, since Barry Trotz has come over and they played, they played eight times and I think it's been an even split, 4-4. So, I mean, they match up pretty well. I thought 5-on-5, the Islanders were the better team. It's tough for your best players that don't kill penalties to get into a groove. You got those guys sitting on the bench waiting for penalties to be killed, and you got a chance to see, like, when a guy like Matt Barzal gets some speed through the neutral zone, how dynamic, how creative he is, the kind of problems he causes. I would expect a much more disciplined New York Islanders team in game two. They have to be. I mean, there's no question about that. And you'll see a lot more urgency from the Capitals. it works both ways, right? Like if you spend that much time on the power play and, you know, you don't score early, it's, I don't want to say it's, you know, it's deflating, but it's not, you know, carrying over the kind of momentum that you want. So I would expect to see more urgency. I bet John Carlson will be better. I mean, that's his first game back coming off an injury. So two teams are really evenly matched, but I mean, the style of play from the Islanders, their structure, they're built for, you know, this brand, this kind of hockey, this playoff atmosphere.
All right. So in looking at some of the other series that are going on, you know, in talking to Greg Wyshynski, I have him on my gambling show quite often. You know, he was really big on Vegas and Tampa coming in. Who do you expect to win the cup this year, Rick?
Ooh, that's a great question. As far as Tampa is concerned, I think we all, you know, if you didn't watch it, you've seen the highlights of that 5 overtime game. That was a huge game for Tampa. I mean, what Tampa tried to do after what happened last year is add some grit, add some physicality to their team. Because, you know, when you get to the playoffs, I mean, all that stuff is ratcheted up. So I think for them to win a close game the way they did, it took a lot longer than they probably expected it. But I think that mentally for them is a huge step. And, you know, Vegas is loaded. If Vegas gets good goaltending, it seems like they're going to ride Robin Lehner for the moment. I mean, that top to bottom, that team is one of my favorite teams in the West. And, I mean, the team that's playing the best right now is Philly. I mean, Philly right now, as far as the East is concerned, since, you know, the restart has been the best team. And one of my other teams that I really like is Colorado. And they took care of, you know, Arizona last night.
What's your take on you know, watching this all transpire in two bubbles? You know, how do you, like, what's some of the takeaways while you're watching these series in these games, Rick?
I think the way the NHL has done it, how they set up the rinks, I think it looks great. Of course, you miss the fans, and I'm sure the players miss the fans. I mean, you've played. You know how you can feed off a crowd, that momentum, mm-hmm. how you can ride that momentum. My biggest takeaway, to be completely honest, and I was having a conversation about this last night, is for the NBA in the NHL, this is like a coach's dream come true, to have all the guys in one spot, don't have to worry about them going out. All they're doing is spending time with each other. They're back and forth to the rink. There's no travel. So, I mean, you're not getting the kind of, you know, grind that you get during, you know, a normal playoff run. And you've seen great hockey. You really have. You've seen high intensity, a lot of physicality. I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And I know I'm going really full circle here, but follow me, because, you know, if you watched the Yankees game last night, Clint Frazier, you know, called up and of course was such a big asset, 3 hits, a home run, 2 RBIs. And I know the question in following a number of Yankee fans and in what's trending was, why isn't this guy an everyday player? And then you get into the debate and the argument in regard to Gardner being in that clubhouse and having that veteran leadership, especially during a pandemic. Then you look at the Cubs and you look at how great the Cubs are doing, and why are the Cubs doing so well? Well, they're playing a division where other teams, you know, have not really been lock and step and have not been following the protocols, like Cleveland, like the Cardinals, like Miami, like the Reds. So, you know, it's really interesting when you look at teams, and granted, like you put the NBA in a different, no pun intended, but in a different bubble, right? Because they are being bubbled. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Major League Baseball and you look at the NFL, you know, where you're really valuing teams is those that have that type of veteran leadership, and the importance of them being in that locker room or being in that clubhouse, because the healthiest teams are the ones that are going to have the most success, right?
No, absolutely. You're 100% right. And I mean, I hate to even admit this, but it's the truth, and I'm not going to pretend like it's not. I mean, and you saw this with the Cleveland Indians. I mean, it's tough to trust every single person on your team that they're going to do the right thing consistently. It really is. And as far as the Gardner conversation is concerned, that's one of the things, and I'm a Mets fan, but I really love about the Yankees, is even with the advanced analytics and everything else, they want, you know, younger, cheaper. They still do put a lot of emphasis on having, you know, really good veteran leadership inside their clubhouse. And I think it pays dividends, especially in a time like this where you're gonna ask your guys to be selfless. Really, I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're gonna sacrifice the next couple months, do all the right things to make sure, you know, you're the last one standing. And I mean, when you look what the Yankees have done so far, I mean, you'd have to feel good about their chances.
Rick DiPietro joining us here on his show, DCR. Anita Markson for the fellas today here on 98.7 ESPN. In talking about the Yankees, obviously another big storyline is Aaron Judge. If you're watching the other night, pulled in the sixth, Yankees were up 8-0. So, of course, now again, you know, I always love that second screen with the social media. Everybody, oh, what's wrong with Judge? Is he injured? Booney comes out post game. No, we're fine. Just we were up. I wanted to give him a break. And then, of course, it comes out the next day that he's got lower body tightness. And Michael Kay yesterday seemed pretty disappointed that the Yankees aren't being more transparent. But here's the thing, Rick, curious to get your thoughts. Do you blame them? Like, short 60-game season due to the pandemic, there's no time for injury. And with the history of this organization being injury prone, especially what we saw last season, you know, I think there is some concern to be as transparent as maybe fans or we sports talk radio hosts would like to see them be, right?
Yeah, but I think you also have to understand, too, that people are going to blow it out of proportion just because of the history of Aaron Judge and the fact that, you know, you have Stanton on the IL already. Looks like, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before you get him back. I think people get frustrated because when you see Aaron Judge healthy, you realize how good he is and how important he is to this team, you know, going on to win a championship. So you get scared. I mean, you get nervous. And I think the last thing the Yankees want to have right now is this conversation to come back, that Aaron Judge is injury prone. And everyone just hold your breath because at some point, as good as he looks now, he's going to be hurt. And, I mean, that's a scary proposition for this team. As loaded as they are, I mean, when Aaron Judge is in right field in this lineup, I mean, this is a team that can win a World Series, and I think they all realize that.
Before we let you go, thoughts on the Rangers and how lucky they are at winning that lottery, that number one overall pick?
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I mean, I guess the one parting gift you get after you get swept is that you have the 12.5% chance to win, and mm-hmm. and you get that ping pong ball. I mean, they're set up. They really are. Second overall pick, Capo Caco, he looked good. I mean, a lot of guys didn't necessarily look great, but I thought Capo Caco looked pretty damn good. They got the goalie and everything else. I love their head coach. So now they got their choice. You know, what they decide to do with it, I think they love who's available there at number one. But, I mean, forecasting them moving forward, I mean, they're set up to have long-term success.
We had Greg Wyshynski on. Ray, the young kid out of Canada,
Alexis Lafreniere.
There you go. Alexis Lafreniere. Yeah, this is why I don't cover hockey.
French. So
let me ask you, because apparently, like, in the Canadian Youth League, he's won the MVP twice, and no other player has ever done that except Sidney. So, coming into now the NHL, if that's the case, I mean, some hefty expectations in comparison to Crosby, right?
Yeah, he's in elite company. I mean, I don't know if he's at that level. I'm not sure if he's, you know, McDavid or Sidney Crosby. Those guys are centers, which, I mean, for any, you ask any, you know, general manager or coach, you love your, you know, to build your team up the middle. So, I mean, he's big, he's electrifying, he's unbelievably skilled, he can facilitate. You know, a lot of people consider him on the wing a guy that's not just a, you know, one track mind goal scorer. He makes the guys around him better. Also a guy to keep an eye on. And again, I don't know what the Rangers are looking for, if they want to go center or not, or they're going to take best player available. But Quentin Byfield, he's a center, and he's a big, you know, big kid, like a really big physical kid, really skilled. So a couple names to keep an eye on.
You know, I know the Rangers, what, about a year or 2 years ago, they send out that letter to their fans. Hey, listen, trust the process. It's going to be a while. But, boy, have they really they've lucked out the past 2 years. Unbelievable. Rick, it's great to hear your voice. I so appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend, my friend.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Hit it straight, please.
Okay. Always. All right. This Saturday, August 15th, the heavyweight title and legacies. Two legends are on the line when Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, only took me 3 days, Ray, complete their trilogy at UFC 252 on ESPN+. Plus. The stage is set for an epic showdown between two of the best heavyweights of all time. Again, UFC 252 is exclusively available on ESPN+. Plus. Subscribe for $64.99 or get UFC 252 in an ESPN+ Plus annual plan. For $84.98. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/PPV.
Mailman?
I can't make this up. Somebody's knocking on my door right now, so I apologize. Should I answer it in live time radio? I don't think so. Hey guys. Hey. So we were gonna talk some NFL right now. Should we, I don't know what to do, Ray. What did you say? All right, let's do this. Let's listen in. This is Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott addressed the media earlier today, or I should say yesterday. Let's listen in. This is what Jerry had to say about Dak's new deal.
Dak is outstanding. He's probably one of the top people that I've been around for his age and his cumulative experience. He's one of the top people that I've been around as far as being aware, understanding. I've never heard or said anything that I didn't think Dak had necessarily weighed or heard before. We think he's outstanding. We think he's our quarterback of the future. We just couldn't get together at this particular time.
Again, Jerry Jones talking about Dak as their quarterback. I Ray, I want to bring you in here because you're a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. You know, based on the fact that they did not get the deal done in a time I think that Dak would have liked for the deal to get done, let alone the money that Dak is looking for. You know, I don't know how you can come out and say Dak is our guy. We're 100% in on Dak. And be totally honest about that in the way that they handled his deal and handled his contract.
Yeah, it doesn't really mesh with everything that's gone on over the past, I would guess, year and a half to 2 years with them, because, you know, you say he's our guy, we love him, we're going to continue to work at this. And to be fair, on the other side, Dak Prescott came out and he was very, you know, complimentary of the organization, and he didn't seem too worried. And it's a little bit reassuring that there doesn't seem to be any animosity between the two sides, at least not outwardly. But it should never have come to this point. This is something that should have gotten done at least in the last year, if not 2 years ago.
Jerry Jones went on to tell the media that COVID-19 was partially to blame for Dak's deal not getting done. Let's listen in.
I've just spent weeks and weeks, a part of this raspy voice on the phone, talking with NFL and the Players Association, weeks and weeks working through the economic consequences. And candidly, nobody knows what's going to be there next year, or the next year. And frankly, we all know that what we were talking about in Dak's case was the next year and the next year and the next year and the next year. So all of that came to bear, and this was just a less than stable time to be talking about serious, generational, if you will, to use Dak's term, dollars in an unknown period of time looking forward. That certainly was one of the issues.
Here's the thing, though, Ray. Kansas City didn't have a problem getting a deal done with, of course, Patrick Mahomes.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Like, that's nonsense. That's Jerry being a salesman. And listen, he was doing a lot of being a salesman yesterday, talking about the stadium and all. I won't get into that, but he Jerry Jones is what Jerry Jones is. And you have to, like, take half of what he says with an entire shake.
Without further ado, Rich Cimini joins us, who covers the Jets for ESPN. Oh, Rich, what a morning. This is live radio, right? I mean, this is where we're at. You know, we're doing our shows from our home, and
right.
I live in a walk-up, and some dude's knocking on my door. So my dogs go crazy. So we just went to a break, and I open up my door. There's nobody out there, but I hear somebody walking down the stairs. I'm like, hello. And I said, did you knock on my door? He said, I probably did. I'm the census. The census come knocking on your door, Rich? When was the last time they did that?
That has not happened to me yet, but I can relate to the remote workings. That's something NFL writers are used to in the off season, and you know, especially now. I'd normally be talking to you standing on the sideline at training camp, but we don't have media access until starting tomorrow.
I was just going to say, Friday, you guys get to watch practice, whatever practice that's going to be. What are you expecting, Rich?
Like It'll look like April, you know, practice, OTAs with, you know, helmets and shorts and no pads. They go on, the pads go on Monday, so then it'll start to really look like training camp.
Again, Rich Simini joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So I have a question for you. How many padded practices are the Jets going to have prior to regular season game one?
I think it's 14, but don't quote me on that. I mean, it seems like they keep changing it, but it's not a lot. I mean, it's the teams are really on the clock right now to try to get ready. You know, like we were talking to offensive coordinator Dal Loggins yesterday on a Zoom call, and he said yesterday felt like the first day of school because it was the first day that they were actually together as a team on the field. So until yesterday, Adam Gase never saw Mekhi Becton, you know, or Denzel Mims on the field, you know, which is really hard to believe considering we're in mid-August.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that in regard to their division, right? Like, you know, a few things. Like I'm really high on the Buffalo Bills, and I was high on them even, you know, before the pandemic, to be quite frank. You could have gotten them to win the division at, I want to say, at like plus 360, plus 310, something like that. They're now plus 110 right now to win the division. You know, I'm looking at teams with a lot of consistency. I look at the Patriots. I know everybody's expecting Cam Newton to start. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I'm actually expecting Stidham to start just because of exactly what we're talking about right now. Only so many padded practices, not enough time to really learn the offense. You know, who knows what Miami's going to do in regard to that quarterback situation. I'm sure they'd like to kind of, you know, get to some experience, but only time will tell. What are you anticipating? What are you hearing? What are you covering in regard to the Jets, in regard to continuity from last season into this season that will make them competitive in this division this season? Rich?
Well, they do have continuity in terms of the coaching staff. The head coach and the three coordinators are the same. And I think the last time that happened for the Jets may have been, I looked this up recently, I think it was 2010. You know, because the Jets have been a revolving door when it comes to coaching and coordinators and so forth. So I think that helps. And the fact that they have a quarterback who knows the system, that helps. Unlike the Giants, teams like the Giants and the Panthers, when you have new quarterbacks and new coaches, I mean, that is really, really hard, you know, considering, you know, the situation they're under. So I think that gives the Jets a little bit of an advantage, but at the same time, their offense, there's no continuity on offense. You know, they're changing basically their entire offensive line. They're relying on a couple of rookies on offense. And so a lot of changeover for the Jets on offense. I think it's going to take a few weeks before this offense is up and running at an efficient level.
It's really going to be interesting. You know, I was very critical of not this current CBA, but the one before it, Rich, because I felt it really brought the quality of football down because of the lack of practices and the lack of contact and all this, you know, only so many hours you're allowed to spend doing X, Y, and Z. And so I felt like teams really did not develop an identity. We really didn't get a good grip on how good or how bad a team was until at least week four, week five of the NFL season. Now, you know, we might be talking week six, week seven, if that.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a coach yesterday, not on the Jets, but, you know, on another team, and he just said, you know, the first few games this year, first four games, might be almost like preseason. I mean, they count for sure, I mean, because it's regular season, but in terms of teams forming identities and going through lineups and, you know, it almost might have a preseason type feel to it. I mean, we've seen the Patriots. They always get off to a little bit of a slow start. I think Bill Belichick's working through some things and trying to find out what his team does best. And by the time they hit October, you know, they're usually humming. You know, maybe it's different this year because they lost so many players and they'll have, you know, the quarterback is different for sure. But, yeah, I think the first month of football this year is not going to be high quality.
Again, Rich Simini joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, Rich, let's talk about some specific players. And that's Lev Bell. Le'Veon Bell getting a lot of attention this past week. Looking good, great shape. And when speaking to the media yesterday, you know, kind of like pose this question. Like, I don't understand. Like, why is there such a big deal made about my relationship with Adam Gase? And I think he's a good coach, and I think he's a good leader of men. Are you believing everything that that Bells is saying about Gase right now?
Well, you know, I do to a certain extent, because here's what the story is. I mean, Adam did not want to sign Le'Veon Bell, and I'm not exactly breaking news there. We've known that. I don't think it was anything personal against him. He just wanted to not spend, you know, $14, $13 million a year on a running back. He would have rather had distributed the funds to other positions and not focus on that position in particular in terms of, you know, financial resources. And so that's the root of this whole, you know, in fact, whether they get along or not, I think their relationship is fine. I mean, Adam, as we all know, is an offensive guy, and he's much closer to the offense. He really has nothing to do with the defense, and that's probably why Jamal Adams spouted off a couple of weeks ago. You know, Bell says, you know, Adams is just different. He's more of an analytical coach than a fiery rah-rah coach, which is what Greg Williams is. So, yeah, I think they have an okay relationship. You know, I don't think it's as bad as some have portrayed.
Interesting. What about Sam Darnold? What have you seen from him, heard from him, really? Because I guess there's nothing you've seen. So what are some realistic expectations for Sam Darnold this season?
Well, I mean, this is, you know, there's some pressure on him this year. I mean, you got a year two to year three, also second year in the system. You want to see some significant improvement for him. I think the talent is there. I don't think there's any question about that. He's left you wanting a little bit more, though. I think last year he showed some promise over the second half of the season. I think when they scaled back the offense a little bit, you could see him feeling more comfortable. And so the coaching staff expects him to really take charge this year. You know, instead of, like, last year was the learning year in the offense, this year is the, you know, the take command year. So they're looking for bigger things from Darnold.
And what about Jadeveon Clowney? I know that's a name that everybody's waiting to see, you know, where he lands. And I know the Jets have come up. As we know, Jamal Adams no longer here. C.J. Mosley has opted out. Is that a possibility?
Anita, I've been saying this for months, and I think I'm going to stick to my stance here. I don't think the Jets have interest in Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, I know it keeps on circulating out there. It got a little buzz when they got Bradley McDougald in the trade from Seattle, because he said on social media that he's going to lobby to try to get Jadeveon here. I think the Jets really, you know, they have the cap room without question. I think their idea is to probably roll it into next year to help them next year, which could be a pandemic affected salary cap, which could be lower. So I think if the right player comes along, I think they'll splurge this year. But I don't believe they see Jadeveon Clowney as that guy.
Last thing for you, your article, your piece that came out yesterday in regard to Woody Johnson, and I guess should we expect further investigation in regard to the allegations out of the UK? What's the latest there, Rich?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the State Department has, in their report, which I got yesterday morning, you know, recommended that, you know, this case warranted further review. And their conclusion was that based on interviews with employees at the U.S. Embassy in London, that he did make inappropriate and insensitive comments related to gender and race. So, you know, that's alarming for sure. And, you know, the NFL is just totally... They punted on this. They just, you know, a spokesman yesterday said they have no comment on it. I think the league should investigate it, even though it didn't happen in a league setting. He was obviously working for the government when this happened, but he is the owner of an NFL franchise. And by the way, his 3-year term as ambassador is coming up to the end very soon, and he could be back in the States and with the Jets by the end of the season. So I think the league should look into it. And I'm fascinated to see how this plays out, but there's certainly some things, alarming concerns for sure.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the NBA, when it comes to, you know, Mark Cuban and in the LA Clippers situation, yeah, and I've said this before, I think the way that Adam Silver I think Adam Silver is the best commissioner across the board. And the way that NBA seems to do things, and we're seeing it how it's playing out right now as well in the NBA bubble, how that's working for them. Maybe they should take a page from that pamphlet.
Yeah, I think this is a little different from the Donald Sterling situation with the Clippers. I mean, there's no tape of Woody. I mean, Sterling was on tape making insensitive comments, and so it seemed to be a pretty open and shut case, and everyone heard that tape, so it was pretty horrifying. But, you know, with Woody, I mean, it's based on interviews with employees in the embassy in London. So, look, I think the government will follow through on it based on the report and continue to review it. And I think the league owes it to their fan, you know, their constituents, their fan base, to investigate it as well.
Rich, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thanks, Anita. Take care.
You got to make sure you follow Rich Samini again. Media able to watch the their first practice on Friday.
I'm ready to show this is the best Le'Veon Bell that's ever, you know, played in the NFL. I think I've had a lot of, you know, success over the course of my career. And that's because I worked hard. You know, I think I worked hard and to help me get to where I was. Now it's like I kind of realized, you know, just over the course of the last 6-7 years, in comparison to where I've been working at now, it's not even close. So this year, I'm expecting a lot for myself, and I hold myself to a high standard, and I'm ready to show everybody, you know, what I'm able to do this year.
That's Le'Veon Bell. Will be an interesting season, that's for sure. Want to remind you, today on ESPN Daily, Daniel Cormier squares off this weekend for the UFC heavyweight title. After a rocky career, can the aging fighter cement his legacy? That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So we just heard from Le'Veon Bell. Big expectations for him. Not sure what to expect from this Jets defense. Let's be honest. They lose two of their best players to one, obviously, Jamal Adams being traded and C.J. Mosley opting out. So realistically, what can you expect in this division? And looking at the AFC East, this is how I see it playing out. The Buffalo Bills right now, they're plus 120. Now, the Buffalo Bills, they bring in Stephon Diggs, wide receiver from Minnesota. So now they better that offense. Singletary is their running back. They drafted him last year, so he's now entering in his second season. They've got arguably one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, definitely top three. I actually love Josh Allen. He's kind of a mix of like a Cam Newton and a Ben Roethlisberger all in one. Dude is huge, can run the ball, can throw the ball, can win you some football games on his shoulder pads alone. So love the quarterback, love the offensive line, depth in the running back position, added a lot of talent around Josh Allen on offense, especially bringing in Stephon Diggs. And their defense is top notch. They have a top five defense in the NFL, let alone you can argue between their secondary and the Ravens secondary is being two of the best. So, and talk about continuity, really didn't lose anyone. I mean, Tre'Davious White was considering opting out. There was some talk and speculation, but he decided to stay. Now, at any point in time, can he opt out moving forward, even if he was second-guessing whether or not he wanted to play or not? Possibly. But as of right now, love the Buffalo Bills to win this division at plus 120. Now, the Patriots, very interesting. I'm an outlier here. I'm one of the very few. Had Mike Tannenbaum on the show not too long ago. And Mike and I, a box of Pro V's, right? That's what's on the that's what the wager's about.
Oh,
a box of Pro V's.
I've got to clip that for later. You just reminded me.
Thank you. So Mike Tannenbaum, and let me preface by saying, in no stretch of the imagination, am I sitting here telling you that Jared Stidham is a better quarterback than Cam Newton? Cam Newton's won an MVP, competed in a Super Bowl. We know what Cam Newton can bring to the table. The reason that, and by the way, you could wager on this. You could wager that Stidham will be the starting quarterback for the Patriots week one. And I want to say that odd is at like plus 300, plus 350 right now. Might be going up. A few reasons here. And really, the biggest is COVID-19. We just heard from Rich Samini. You know, this today will be the first day that Sam Darnold is going to be actually seen with, you know, his new offensive lineman in Becton. So, you know, you got Cam Newton coming in, having to learn a whole new system. And the Patriots, if you talk to players, offensive players who've played in that Patriots system, their playbook is not simple at all. It's very intricate. It's very difficult to digest and execute. And so I just think there's a huge learning curve here for Cam Newton to get acclimated to his teammates and the playbook, where Stidham, he was there last year, competed, actually won the job to advance to be the backup quarterback to Tom Brady. And everything that I'm hearing is that Bill Belichick and Josh and that off all those coaches, they love Stidham. And Stidham is welcoming this competition. This is a young kid who's been through a lot in his life. Estranged from his parents, through college, during college, lived with his girlfriend's family. Has not had an easy road. Of course, went through all the stuff in Baylor and then transferred. So this is a young man who's been through some trial and tribulation and is open to this competition. And I think he's going to put his best foot forward. So again, I'm not sitting here saying that Stidham is a better quarterback than Cam Newton. What I'm saying is, because of the situation that has presented itself, the one quarterback that might give the Patriots the best opportunity to win ball games early is Stidham. But even with that being said, talking about who's going to win this division, you could bet the Patriots are going to win it at plus 130, but look at all the players that have opted out, and two crucial guys on defense, in Hightower and Chung. So I don't even expect the Patriots to win, to make it to the postseason, by the way. I just don't. I think the only team that will make it to the postseason out of the AFC East is the Buffalo Bills. The Dolphins, they've got better odds of winning the division over the Jets, by the way. The Dolphins plus 800, the Jets plus 850. And I think the big reason in regard to the Dolphins is what they've been able to do in free agency. They brought in so many good players in free agency. And also, you got to love the coach. You've got to like how the Miami Dolphins ended the season. And even though it was a season that, of course, we labeled it tank for Tua, and sure enough, they were able to get Tua. But still, last year, if you look at the games, especially down the stretch, those guys played really, really hard for Flores. So I think a lot of that plus 800 as opposed to the Jets at plus 850 has a lot to do with the coach, the coaching staff, and the players that they were able to bring in free agency. That's the Dolphins are building something great. Now, I'm not all on board with Tua. If you listen to my analysis during the draft, I loved Herbert, and I still do. Not to say that Tua's got a lot of talent and could be a really great quarterback in the NFL. The risk reward for me when it comes to Tua, an injury prone, and that hip, I had scouts tell me that it's when he's going to need hip replacement based on the injury that he had. So just a huge red flag for me. But the Dolphins wanted to take a chance, and they did. And I hope it does work out for them, because I'm from Miami. There is a small part of me that does root for the Dolphins. And of course, if you know anything about me and my shows, I have my mom on quite often, Mama Mimi, and she's a huge Dolphins fan. And man, she's been suffering since Dan Marino retired. So I really, for her sake, I hope that the Dolphins have somewhat of a good season. But that's where the AFC East is standing right now. So the Bills, you can get them at plus 120, Patriots plus 130, Dolphins plus 800, Jets plus 850. I think the Bills run away with this thing. I'm telling you, they're just so good. And I think they're going to be so good this season.
We're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe not showing what they're doing as much as we do. We'll do still the same patterns of things. We'll still do a lot of the same exact things, but we'll highlight the people we have here. And as you saw, what we did there is that he had maybe his most productive year here because of how we highlighted the skill sets that he's had. And I've had a lot of really, really good guys at that position. Over the years, I've had a lot of really good safeties to be able to build things around.
That is Greg Williams, defensive coordinator for the Jets, and I have the utmost respect for him. I think he's arguably one of the best, if the not best, defensive coordinator in the NFL. But I am sorry, sir. Jamal Adams is not going to get bored winning. Ray, he's going to be winning. And if you listen to what Jamal Adams says time and time again, for him, it is about winning. He is not used to losing. He's probably never lost as much as he did when he was here with the Jets in his entire life, even when he was like a Pop Warner football. So I have a really, really hard time believing that statement. 800-919-3776.
Let's go cover three all the time and, you know, winning. And
Here's another thing, Ray. I see the Seattle Seahawks utilizing Jamal Adams like they did like Cam Chancellor. That's how I envision them using Jamal Adams. I don't think he's going to get bored with that. Let's go to William in Hackensack. William, you're up.
Hi, Anita. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I have a question. Right before Jamal Adams got traded, I bought the Jamal Adams black jersey and the hat. What do you think is going to happen now that he's not there anymore?
To your jersey and your hat?
No, as far as him not being with the Jets.
I think they'll be lucky if they win six games, William.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Future's bright. Future's bright, right? Like, you know, all the picks that Joe D, and thank you for the phone call, William. Not sure what you're going to do with your shirt and your hat, but, you know, all the picks that Joe D has accumulated, not only that, but of course the Leo Williams trade to the Giants, and you know, the future is bright for the Jets. In Joe D, I trust. I will say that. Jury's still out for me in regard to Adam Gase. Jury's still out for me in regard to Sam Darnold. I'll be honest. I'm hopeful. There's some things that I've really liked. But I think what Jets fans should be excited about is all the draft picks and the fact that Joe D is leading the way and making the decisions. I do want to play this clip. Now, we just heard from Jerry Jones not too long ago. Dak Prescott spoke to the media yesterday as well and had this to say about Jason Garrett.
The biggest changes, I just said, communication. I think from the offensive line to the receivers out wide, everybody knows why and everybody knows their purpose and everybody knows where they need to be and the whole point of that within the play. And I think that just gives us all knowledge. I mean, we're somewhat of veteran guys, young guys who've played a lot of football earlier in their career, but I wouldn't say that we've been as smart as we've needed to be within the game of football. And I think that's what these coaches have come and added and just got us all speaking the same language. And I think that's going to be huge. So obviously Kellen's done a great job, in the past. He's going to do a great job this year. The way he's taken over and running this thing, it's been fun. Just excited just to get the ball out there and to get this thing going for real.
We just haven't been as smart as we could have been. Whoa. If that's not a dig on Jason Garrett and Jason Garrett's offense, which now is here in New York, and he's trying to teach young Daniel Jones, that must not sit well, I would imagine, with a number of Giants fans. So let's take a look. And Dre, I'm going to come to you in just a second, so hang tight, dude. I promise I'll get to you. So let's take a look. We just took a look at the AFC East. Let's take a look at the NFC East. Dallas Cowboys to win the division -110. The Eagles +140. I am all over the Eagles this season. And I wonder, I know that there's some news. The Cowboys, they signed rusher Everson Griffin. Now, again, Ray, I want to bring you in here because you're a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm sure what I had to say just now, it really did not sit well with you, and I have to be honest. But I wonder if those odds changed in favor of the Dallas Cowboys after this signing. How much of an asset, how much can he contribute to this Dallas Cowboys defense with that signing?
Well, and you can ask Chris Canty about this because he and I have been sitting in this room since the end of March when he became available, was like, you know, Everson Griffin is a pretty good fit there in Dallas. They actually have his old defensive coordinator in Minnesota on the coaching staff already. It's just like, it's one of those moves that makes too much sense and just time goes by. Why aren't the Cowboys doing this? Why aren't the Cowboys signing this guy? And so when it finally came to fruition yesterday, it was like, oh, that's a sneaky good signing by Dallas. It's like, no, it's about damn time Dallas picked up this guy. What took them so long? And I guess maybe it was just debates about money. I mean, they get him 1 year, $6 million. I think there's like $3 million in incentives. It's basically Robert Quinn all over again. And Robert Quinn was on a 1 year deal. He was a guy who was kind of in a prove it situation, and he ended up having a great year opposite DeMarcus Lawrence there in Dallas, and he parlayed that into a nice little deal with the Chicago Bears this offseason, you would say, right? So I think it's a good signing for them. They needed help along the defensive line, so will that be what pushes them over Philly in the East? I'm not sure that by itself will. Probably better coaching, as Dak Prescott alluded to. More help on the defensive line, you know, signing guys like Gerald McCoy and Dontari Poe, not necessarily to be difference makers, but, you know, guys who can just kind of help the pass rush along and cover for what's a young and inexperienced secondary.
I do like the CeeDee Lamb decision to draft him in the first round. I think that their wide receiving core is going to be pretty explosive and pretty exciting, as we heard Amari Cooper come out like, what, 2 weeks ago and say that he expects all three wide receivers to have over 1,000 receiving yards.
He can relax just a little
bit. Well, I think it's going to be hard to do when you got Ezekiel Elliott in your backfield, who's demanding, you know, at least anywhere between 15 to 17 touches,
right,
and hopefully can rush for over 100 yards a game.
I will say there's a chance at it because Mike McCarthy is a guy who likes to spread the ball around and he wants to throw. He'll use the run game, but he's not going to use it like Jason Garrett did.
So, again, where the odds stand right now, Dallas Cowboys -110, the Eagles +140. Listen, the Eagles won the division last year. Marinate in this. There were 20 over 20. I want to say, because the exact number, I want to say it was like either 26, 27. There were over 20 practice squad players that played in actual games for the Eagles. Over 20. That's how ravaged they were last year. I mean, dudes were scoring touchdowns. You're like, wait, what's his name? Guys were suiting up to play in the secondary. Who's that? What? Huh? What? Like, unbelievable. So, a healthy Eagles team, they add a plethora of talent on the defensive side of the ball. I love what they did in the draft. And if I could get the Eagles at +140 to win the NFC East, are you kidding me? Because let's be honest, it's going to come down to the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys competing to win the division, and the Giants and the Washington team, because that's what we're calling it, the Washington football team, for them to battle it out to see who comes in third and fourth. Really, that's what it's going to come down to. Giants to win the division 10-1. Washington to win the division 13-1. Save your money. That's ridiculous. But I'll tell you where there's value here, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles at +140 to win the NFC East. Let's go to Dre in Jersey. Dre, you're up.
Hey, Anita. Good morning. I hope you're doing well. So I just heard you talking about the Eagles. Now, listen, I'm a diehard Cowboys fan, so, you know, I'm just going to put it out there. But everything that the Cowboys added, we have not only DeMarcus Lawrence, Aldon Smith, Gerald McCoy, now we have Everson Griffin. Like, that's so much pressure. And then on top of that, cope with our offense. Like, I think that we're really going to just blow everybody away this year. I think the biggest problem that we were lacking last year was the leadership on the coaching side. And I think that that's going to show this year. And, you know, I just thought it was time for Jason Garrett to go. That's why I think, you know, everybody saw us, like, just fold at the end of the year. But I think that, you know, the expectations for the Cowboys this year should be very high. And, yeah, I just wanted to see what you thought about that. And nice talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dre. Listen, expectations are high. I like to find value. Whenever I'm wagering, I want to find value, and I just find a lot of value in the Eagles at +140 to win the division because, again, I think this is going to be I'm not sitting here telling you. Listen, I will sit here and I will tell you the Buffalo Bills are going to run away with the division. They are going to run away with it. That's not what I'm saying about the NFC East. It's not what I'm saying. It's a two-team competition, and it's going to be competitive, and it's going to be a battle, And chances are, you know, there is an opportunity that the Dallas Cowboys win. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be surprised. But I like the Eagles a little bit more. And if I could get them at plus 140, that's great value there. This Saturday, I want to remind you, August 15th, the heavyweight title, two legacies, two legends. Their legends, their legacies really on the line when Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier complete their trilogy, UFC 252, on ESPN+. The stage is set for an epic showdown between these two. And again, UFC 252 is exclusively available on ESPN+. Subscribers, you can get it for $64.99, but sit tight. They've got a better deal for you. Get UFC 252 and ESPN+, their annual plan, for $84.98. How great's that? Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/PPV. Also, reminder, today on ESPN Daily, Cormier squares off this weekend, as we know, in this heavyweight fight, after a rocky career and the aging fighter. Can he cement his legacy? That's on the ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you tune in for that. As I said, Alan Hahn is coming your way in about 8 minutes. At 12:30, he's going to have the Rangers head coach David Quinn on, and at 2 o'clock, he'll have Jay Williams, who of course is starting the new show in the morning with Keyshawn and Zubin. That's going to be fun. And then Michael Kay begins at 3 o'clock this afternoon, right here on 98.7 ESPN. And Ryan Rucco will be on at 4:45 with him. So that's what's coming your way. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Dan, who's been holding on. Dan in Manhattan, welcome in.
Thanks, Anita, and hope you guys are doing well and staying safe and dry today.
Thank you.
Wanted to make a quick comment on the Giants and the Jason Garrett quote you read from Dak a little bit earlier. You know, while I agree that Garrett's had his deficiencies as a head coach, I think if you look over the past decade or so, he's been effective developing quarterbacks, tight ends, running backs, and he's had good receivers the last 10 or so years. So I think when you look at just the offensive standpoint, I think the Giants make a lot of sense. They're developing a quarterback. Their best player is a running back. Their best skilled player is a tight end. I think it makes sense, and I don't necessarily put too much weight into Dak's comments about his former coach.
Okay, that's fair. Listen, in watching the Dallas Cowboys, and again, Ray Santiago, who's producing the show, he's a huge Dallas Cowboy fan. Him and I were talking about it in the break. You know, it's just – It's wash, rinse, and repeat when it comes to Jason Garrett. There's two types of coaches in the NFL, and the ones that I like, especially as offensive coordinators, are those that don't have a system. They're not stuck to a system. This is my system. Chip Kelly. Who's the coach before Shermer for the Giants?
McAdoo.
Ben McAdoo. You know, you've got coaches who come in and this is my system and it works. I've had success in these other places. You're going to play the X receiver. You're going to play the Y. You're going to play the Z. You're going to play. And they plug these guys in and they expect these guys to have success in their system. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. And the NFL is a changing animal. You know, three wide receivers set. With the resurgence of the birth, let's call it the birth of option quarterback with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. You know, there's just. It's evolving, it's developing, it's changing, it's always changing. And those are the coordinators and those are the coaches that I like. The ones that look at their roster, work with their scouting department. You know, teams that go out and draft players who represent their philosophy and their brand and their identity as a football team. And then you create systems, whether it's offense or defensive systems, that accentuate the talent that you have in your building. That's what you do. It's like, you know, I know I'm really high on the Baltimore Ravens. You know, one might even call me a fan. That's fine. But I love what Baltimore has been able to do. You know, they've had a lot of success and a lot of history, rich history in regard to how they have drafted. From Ozzie Newsome, now Eric DaCosta is overseeing their scouting department. He's now the GM. And Steve Bisciotti lets them do it. Steve Bisciotti does not interfere. He lets them make the decisions. And they went out and they committed to Lamar Jackson. They traded up back into the bottom of the first round to get Lamar Jackson. And then what did they do? They said, this is our quarterback. At the time, Joe Flacco was their starting quarterback, but this is our quarterback of the future. So now we need to start planning and integrating an offense that is going to benefit this young man because he's not your average bear. So how are we going to do that? You know what this story is underreported. If you look at the roster and the players that have been drafted by the Ravens, a lot of them, the flow comes from Oklahoma. A lot of the flow comes from Oklahoma. And they have taken coaches from that program and have brought them in to help them create the offense that is now in Baltimore. And they bring those coaches in and help them during OTAs. So there is a farm system that has been created now in regard to, because the system that Oklahoma plays, very similar to the system that the hybrid system that the Ravens have incorporated for the Ravens. So now, A, you're bringing players in whose physicality and whose athleticism and skill set matches the offense that you're playing in the NFL, but also it's somewhat of a seamless transition because now you're pretty much it's a hybrid offense or a hybrid game plan in regard to what they've been playing in for years in college. It's brilliant. As opposed to bringing in a coach like Jason Garrett, like McAdoo, what we saw happen with the Eagles and Chip Kelly, and I could go on, and bringing in a coach to say, okay, listen, this is my offense, and this is how we're going to play it, and I'm going to plug you here, I'm going to plug you there, and I expect you to perform and succeed. I just don't think that works. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, this is the next few years are going to be really crucial and really important for the development of Daniel Jones and the quarterback position here with the Giants. That's for sure. And we'll see if the result will be any different for Daniel Jones than it was for Dak Prescott.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.